नमस्ते, गुड मॉर्निंग। एट द रिसेंटली कंक्लूडेड रिट्रीट इन तिरुवनमलाई वी टच्ड अपॉन भगवान रमणा महर्षिज रिलेशनशिप विद अनामलाई स्वामी। And the insights that we could glean from their conversations. So, I would like to start by reading out a couple of passages spoken by Annamalai Swami. And then, if you would like to share something or ask something, you are very welcome to. So these are questions which are asked to Annamalai Swami later by sincere seekers. And this is a reply to a question where he says, "Before we came into this world, all the incidents of our life were predestined. Where we have to live, what acts we have to perform, etc. If we desire anything other than our prarabdha, that which was already destined for us, we cannot attain it." You see, people mistake this approach to be one of fatalism. But in fact, it delivers a deep relaxation. And this is the linchpin in the Bhagavad Gita, that all you can do is perform the actions you were destined to do and leave the results to God. This is not a call for stepping back and not doing anything. This is a misinterpretation of these teachings. Now, when Annamalai Swami was put in charge of building the buildings of the ashram, it is well known and documented that Bhagwan was overseeing each and every stone that was put in place. He was thoroughly involved in the building of the buildings. All the plans were his, were shown to him. But he took a back seat. He told Annamalai Swami, "No one is to know that I am directing the plans." So there was full involvement. Absolutely full involvement, just as it is stated in the Gita. Yet, Bhagwan said, "All the buildings have already been built. All the buildings have already been built." Which meant, in the duration of time, the actions have to be performed. But when we free ourselves from this burden of doership, knowing that thy will be done, then this journey becomes quite liberating. Annamalai Swami says, because this question was asked, "So we only think that we have choices, but the sense of choice is not real." So Annamalai Swami says, a man once asked Bhagwan, "Why did God choose this way of giving grace only through misery?" वाई डिड ही नॉट चूज सम अदर वे? भगवान रिप्लाइड, इट इज हिज वे, हु आर यू टू क्वेश्चन हिम? ऑन अनदर ओकेजन अ डेविटी आस्क्ड भगवान, वाई डज गॉड नॉट अपियर बिफोर मी? भगवान आंसर्ड, इफ ही अपियर्स बिफोर यू इन पर्सन, यू विल नॉट लीव हिम इन पीस. ही इज नॉट अपियरिंग बिकॉज ही इज अफ्रेड ऑफ यू. ही इज अफ्रेड ऑफ मैनिफेस्टिंग इन अ फॉर्म दैट यू कैन सी बिकॉज ही नोज दैट इफ ही डज, यू विल जस्ट गिव हिम अ लॉन्ग लिस्ट ऑफ द थिंग्स दैट यू वॉन्ट. यू सी द मी, द वॉन्ट्स ऑफ द मी. इट्स इनक्रेडिबल. नाउ अनमलाई स्वामी सेज, आई वंस हर्ड भगवान से टू पॉल ब्रंटन, If you do upasana, which is meditation, on the all-pervading self, you will get infinite energy. All beings, all things, all people in the world are your own self. They are all indivisibly part of you. If you can see all as yourself, how can you do harm to anyone else? When you have that clear vision, whatever you do to others, you know that it is done to yourself only. So, you see, this is where the emphasis was on during the retreat, that you cannot realize the self and have a distorted relationship with the world. You cannot realize the self and have most of your relationships to be inharmonious, because if there is only one self, the manifestation is a reflection of that very self. So, what is your relationship with your own reflection is to be asked. And when we say relationships, it is not only about relationships with people, but your relationship with what happens in your life, pleasure or pain, and finally, your relationship with yourself, your very self. So this is the Trinity. And when people ask me, why is there so much emphasis on the word relationships in this teaching? It is because simply we are in the realm of duality, which is two, me and you, me and the other. Relationship means in relation to. We are not living in singularity. We are living in Maya, which is the appearance of multiplicity. But because we are lost in it, we lose the sense of singularity and think the multiplicity is all there is. That is the Maya. So it is like we have forgotten that we are standing before the mirror and seeing our own very self. The veil has been placed. So, what happens is we are standing before the mirror and seeing others. And we lose sight of the fact that in order to see others, we have to exist. And all our lives, we start sticking labels on the images we see in the mirror of life. Of people we love, we hate, those we judge. And those labels are just being stuck on our own consciousness. So we segmented and split and sliced up the one source consciousness into parts and got stuck in the dualism of daily living. When these labels start getting peeled away one by one, and one sees that in essence there is no difference between the person I love the most and hate the most. In essence, there's no difference between the person who loves me the most and hates me the most, because all are aspects of the one source consciousness. That is when I transcend the dualistic framework of daily living, because I am no longer now seeing through the eyes of duality, but the eye of singularity. I still have to navigate my boat through life's journey. That has to be done till the last breath. But now I am more at peace. I am not trying to push the boulders out of the way, but I now try to find my way around them. Row, row, row your boat gently down the stream, gently down the stream. Merrily, 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 life is but a dream. This is the living dream of life, and the dream is the multiplicity. This dream, the waking state, which disappears in a flash when we slip into the dream state, and that dream state, which disappears in a flash when we are in deep sleep, how real can it be? How real can this be? So, is it worth the agitation, the aggressiveness, the trouble we take on and we give to others when life is but a dream, the dream of consciousness? And yet, as Bhagwan says, all actions are on account of prarabdha, the ordainer. Controls the fate of all souls according to their prarabdha. So we face it, we accept it. Thy will be done. When a great job comes my way, thy will be done. When I lose my job, thy will be done. When a beautiful relationship flowers, thy will be done. When a beautiful relationship ends, thy will be done. And this whole concept of my will and God's will are also polarities, because we are in a dualistic framework. So, because the ego is so strong, I am in charge of my life. The sage presents the ego with the fact that you think you are in charge, but really you aren't. You can't even control your own breath or your heart pumping. What are you in charge of? So the ego is shaken up from its slumber and realizes, my God, there's some truth to this. So the my will, which was so precious, now gets to stand on shaky ground with the realization that there is a higher power which determines the results of my actions. But in effect, both are concepts presented to cancel each other out in the realm of duality, because there is only one will. There is only one. That one makes the ego thinks it is the doer, And that one takes away the sense of doership in the ego. This is the gift of the spiritual journey. That is why Bhagwan said the purpose of life is to realize the self. My spiritual guide Rameshji kept it more simple because he was in an urban center like Mumbai. People had their daily lives. They were householders, and so he would say the purpose of life is to discover peace and harmony in daily living. Or he would say the purpose of life is to let life flow. But they delivered the same thing, you see. They delivered what would be called enlightened living. Not a quest to attain and achieve the self, because the self is consciousness, which is what you already are. How could you attain it? How could you achieve it? But that ego, that child ego, which is told in school, you must get good marks, is trained to believe it can attain good marks, and so on and so forth throughout life. The burden of doership and failure and success. What a burden we carry. And it is a time to rejoice when one is on the spiritual discovery, because the fallacy of this burden is revealed. And being enlightened means life becoming lighter. It is not a state to be achieved. It's like, imagine saying to someone, I am enlightened. Enlightened about what? Enlightened about the darkness of the ego, the sense of doership, me and mine. I am enlightened now about that, which I didn't know earlier. I thought I was the doer. I thought others were the doers. But now I am enlightened about the fact that we are not. That which I didn't know before, I know now. So I'm enlightened about it. So simple. But on the spiritual journey, this becomes a quest to find the Holy Grail. And if one finds it, then one proclaims it to others. Frankly, one should be least interested in all this enlightenment business. One should just look at one's actions through the day, contemplate on them, see where the ignorance lies, and see with the revelation of that ignorance the degree of peace that is delivered in daily living. As simple as that. That would be constant meditation. That would be gyan tapas, which the sages talk about. Using knowledge, discrimination, understanding to see the events that have transpired in the day and how they have disturbed my peace of mind. And invariably, I come to the conclusion that my peace of mind has been disturbed because I had made a wrong assumption that God should behave a certain way, or people should behave a certain way, or I should behave a certain way. So I do not accept what is, I do not accept as is, and I live my life as a what should be, what could be, what should have been, what could have been. And so I have one leg in the dead past and the other in the imaginary future. And this is how I crucify myself on the altar of doership. If one is keeping on asking, when will I get enlightened? It is a sheer and sure sign that surrender to the divine will has not happened. Because if there is total surrender to the divine will, the question will not arise. So better be surrender to the divine will than worry about enlightenment. That is why Bhagwan said, let what comes come, let what goes go, and see what remains. What can remain except consciousness? Thoughts, views, feelings, ideas, impressions, judgments come and go on the screen of consciousness. Where else? A dead body has no thoughts. A dead body has no judgments and feelings. So for the inquiring one, by and by, gradually, when the content of consciousness, which was based on doership, is dissolved, and the mind is more and more vacant, empty, open, and bright, then that consciousness, the screen of consciousness, is where one is resting. Being in the now is that. Being in the now means abiding in consciousness and pure being without the mind being diverted to the past or the future. And a mind which is no longer embroiled in doership. So when those dialogues are dead, that light of consciousness is shining because there is nothing to obscure it. That is enlightenment. So be close to those in whose company your mind quietens down. They are doing you a very big favor. And on that note, I'd like to add one more passage, if I may. Annamalai Swami says, if seekers are always in the company of worldly people who take the mind and body to be I, they will get affected by their mind currents. Self-ignorance can be contagious. I love this line. Don't associate with worldly people. Either do meditation alone or do it with people who are striving to give up their mental attachments. So you see, here he is pointing to satsang, the company of truth. So many times I get emails. People say that they get energy drained when they go to parties or to public places like shopping malls and so on and so forth because the mundane mind is very strong. As my guide would say, body, mind, organisms, and all the load of thoughts and doership they carry, you're in that field. So, till one has attained and established in peace where one is not disturbed by that, it is quite understandable that one cannot take that onslaught. And so, this is where satsang comes in. Group meditation, being part of a sangha, or being with people who have the same quest in life. So, they talk about matters other than the mundane. Then one finds that one is losing old friends because one has now become boring. This is really a template. It is a classic template on the spiritual journey where the old identity is dropping away and people are afraid because they are losing their friends. They are no longer being invited to parties like they used to be. And this is not easy for some because the identifications are so strong. But to be courageous and see this process through, because it is nothing but the dissolving of the false. It is like when George Bernard Shaw was at a party and the host came up to him and asked him, are you enjoying yourself? And he replied, that's the only thing I'm enjoying. And what is this enjoyment? Is this being? Just enjoying being? All right. If anyone would like to share something, then you may raise your hand. I'm a bit slow with technology, so please forgive me. Yes, Bobby.
Namaskar, Guruji. I
Namaste.
just wanted to express my gratitude and my appreciation for you making the teaching available and for holding satsang on Zoom for those of us that can't be with you in India. I'm very grateful for the impact that the teaching has had on my life. It's been a short time. And so really what I have most of and what I'm really grateful for is silence. But I did want to express my gratitude and my devotion. So thank you, Guruji.
Thank you, Bobby. And you know, the beautiful part of the teaching is when it impacts not just you, but those whom you live with. That is what happened.
Yeah, it's true. I'm so glad that you mentioned that. I hear them above me right now. They're making a bunch of racket. That's why I'm in my unfinished basement, is because it's late here. But they're not asleep, so I might as well be upstairs. But it's
Very
true,
good.
and I appreciate it. It's experienced through them, and gratitude certainly arises for them, and how I can see grace flowing to me and through me in those relationships.
Where are you based?
Colorado
Okay, so what time
in
is
the
it?
United States. It is it's a great question. It's 10:37 p.m. on Saturday evening.
Well, not too bad, not too
No, not at all. And so I'm
bad.
so grateful to join you on a Sunday morning. Thank you.
Thank you, Bobby. Thank you very much. God bless.
You too.
Yes, Maya.
Hi, Gautam. A very good
Hello.
day to you.
Thank you.
My question is that here in Australia, we have a lot of spiders in our homes. And I have a lot of compassion for spiders. So I would take a jar, put them in, and take them outside. I wish them well too. I cannot accord the same compassion for mosquito. And I feel divine intelligence in the creation of sun, moon, stars, galaxy. But I think he lost the plot when he created a mosquito. And all the compassion goes out a window if I see a mosquito sitting on me. And I am well aware. Please don't quote Bhagwan Ramana, what comes, comes, goes, goes, because at that time, I just want to kill the mosquito. And I try to smack and but I see that deep down inside me, I do wish to kill it. And I don't know what's happening in my awareness, which distinguish between a spider and a mosquito. And if I do kill it, my mind says, oh, it's going to have a better life. I have done the parabada, it was predestined. And I go through these justifications in my mind. So please say something that helps me. Thank you.
Thank you, Maya. I'm glad you're troubled by just such small things. But I will tell you something which will provide tremendous relief, and also to make sure that this is 100% relief, I will request someone from my team to send you the exact quotation of Bhagwan's where he tells people it's all right to kill insects and mosquitoes that are harming you. So, don't worry too much about it. Obviously, and you know, let's not forget, I don't know about Australia, but in India, mosquitoes carry some very lethal diseases. various forms of malaria, dengue, which is very big in India, which is fatal. And so, to just repeat again, Bhagwan himself was seen killing insects. You see, people think Bhagwan has been this kind of above it all and resting in Brahman, Parabrahman, and not doing anything. These are men of the world. I keep reiterating this, whether it was Nisargadatta Maharaj, Ramana Maharshi, they were pragmatic people. And that sense of pragmatism gets lost in this quest to be the perfect self. How can there be a perfect self in an imperfect manifestation when only the one source is perfect? So please rest easy. Please don't sleep as far, lose sleep as far as mosquitoes are concerned. We are going to send you that quotation. I'm going to make sure of it. And I really hope you let go of this sense of concepts and doership as far as spiders and mosquitoes is concerned. It really doesn't matter. Your body-mind organism prefers spiders to mosquitoes, so be it. Someone else may have a problem with cockroaches and not mosquitoes. So it's all right. It's all right, absolutely. Yes.
Thank you.
I do hope if you can send in your email ID to us on the website, that would be great. But I assure you, you're going to get a reply because there's nothing troubling. There's no small thing which troubles us. These are big things because we are taking a life. You know, Maya, I read in a book something very beautiful, which I will share with all of you all. In India, we have this practice of annadan, giving food as charity, feeding the poor or feeding the sadhus as a very nice thing to do because, after all, this is the food body. So one man, one sage, said to his disciple to find an anthill, colony of ants, and go and feed them. So the disciple said, "Why, master? Why ants?" He said, "Because you don't have the money to feed thousands of human beings. You're a man with limited resources. So if you go and put jaggery and rice or whatever it is at the anthill, you will feed millions of ants, and each ant is a life." So, you see, honoring life is what comes naturally. There are different life forms. There are those which are deadly, those which are not deadly. God has made everything, nothing is apart from it. And everything is honored. Everything is, and you're quite right. I have a friend in India. When he kills mosquitoes, he actually, before he kills the mosquito, says, "I wish you a higher birth," and then kills it. You see? And forget mosquitoes, alcohol. As the Aghori Vimalananda said, "Do you know the millions of yeast cells who are sacrificing their life for your drink? In that case, Maya, you'd be a mass murderer, right?" So everything is relative. Everything is absolutely relative. Better we stand where our feet are, deal with our problems, deal with our situations, face things day by day, and are concerned with not only our peace of mind, but that we try not to disturb others' peace of mind. So simple. All right. Yes, Anshul.
Namaskar
Namaste.
Gautam. Listening to you is giving like sea of calm. So
Sorry, I can't hear you clearly. Sorry.
can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm saying ki listening to you is really like sea of calm.
Thank you.
Okay, so my question is like this has been my question of my life now. Actually, in 2014, I experienced Sai Baba, Shirdi Sai Baba miracles. Like, he came to my life and I experienced them almost daily for about 2 years. Now, my question is that He vanished away from my life. I don't know what happened. Like, he came into my life. I experienced many miracles and all on daily basis for 2 years. Then suddenly it stopped. Like, even now I just wonder what could have gone wrong, and I don't understand. And my question is basically, I have seen that the law of attraction coaches, they have experienced the same thing, so it is very common for them. Like, they ask for ice cream, they think about ice cream, and someone will come with ice cream. So they also have experienced those things. So what is the difference between like being a devotee and between the law of attraction or manifestation thing? So this is my question.
Thank you. I think you must lodge a complaint with Sai Baba for abandoning you.
I don't know what happened.
You see, that's the problem with miracles. We want a continuous supply chain of miracles, as I just read out what Bhagwan said. Miracles are just tools to break our conditioning, our logical mind, left brain thinking. Once that purpose has been served, it is no longer needed. Otherwise,
Okay.
why would Sai Baba say that I give people what they want so that they may want what I want to give them? Now, what about this part? You want a full long shopping list for Sai Baba. So you want miracles all the time. Like a friend of mine, she comes to the satsang, says that she says she has a black belt in shopping. So you want a. You see, the miracle is peace of mind in daily living. Sukha Shanti. Resting and being, seeing Brahman for being all there is. That is the miracle. So let what comes come, let what goes go. That is why when someone, a scholar asked Nisargadatta Maharaj, what will you do if Shiva and Vishnu come and stand before you? He said, I have absolutely no interest in doing anything, because if they've come before me, they will leave. And I'm not interested in that which comes and goes. I'm interested in the eternal. So why not be thankful for experiencing miracles? You're privileged. I have not experienced such miracles, so you're more privileged than me. So be thankful that your quota of miracles came to you, and now perhaps the quota is over or not. We don't know. If it's meant to
Yeah.
happen, it'll happen.
But I just loved those, like, he always showed that he's with me. Like, I felt pulsating in his murti. I love those such little things. That was really so beautiful.
That is very nice, but that's because you needed it at that time. Now, why do you need it?
Oh.
And please introduce me to some law of attraction coaches, because I used to have a very nice hazelnut ice cream, but that restaurant closed down. And since then, I can't find a hazelnut ice cream in Mumbai. So I would like to meet such powerful people so that I can manifest these wonderful flavors.
Those coaches have experienced like anything, then I feel that it was not about devotion. It is maybe just law of attraction manifestation, because they have manifested so many things, whatever they think, and they manifest.
This teaching is the law of distraction. Whatever is
Bilkul.
distracting you is what is being removed away, so that the primary focus is peace of mind. Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Venkat.
Yes, good morning. Do you hear me clearly?
Not too clearly. Can you come closer
Okay,
to the
let
mic?
me come close to the mic, I think. Now it is okay?
Yes. Are you still in India?
Yeah, I'm still in India. I'm in Bangalore.
Okay.
Okay, I have two questions. As we say that there is no free will or free will.
Sorry, I can't hear you, Venkat.
Yeah.
Can you?
As we say that there is no free will, everything is predetermined or predestined. Even me asking this question at this moment, it was meant to happen now, not 1 minute before, not 1 minute after. Yeah. So, first question is that anything that comes at the moment inside me, it has to take place without the doership. Like, it ends moment, I should let it act without any coercion. Is it, I understood correctly?
So I got the gist of what you're saying because your audio is not clear.
Achha.
Yes, you are not the doer of your actions, but one has to be mindful that one is not absorbed of the consequences of the actions.
ठीक है ठीक है ठीक है.
That
सो
is to be noted.
सॉरी सॉरी या ओके ओके ओके. सो एनीथिंग वी डू वी जस्ट डू इट. इट इज मेंट टू हैपन. वॉट एवर एक्शन कम्स आउट ऑफ मी इट इज मेंट टू हैपन. लाइक सो आई डू द एक्शन आई लेट इट फ्लो द एक्शन.
Yes,
ओके ओके
but there is a difference between the man of ignorance and the man of understanding.
ओके
The man of understanding knows that he is not the doer of his actions. The man of ignorance thinks he is the doer of his actions, right?
Okay. Okay. But the action happens.
Action happens in both cases.
Ah, okay.
But the man of understanding or the woman of understanding who knows it is not my action because my action is based on factors beyond my control is at peace.
Okay.
The person who is steeped in doership is not at peace. In both cases, actions have consequences. Consequences must be faced. That is the law. But the only difference is that the person of understanding is at peace, knowing that God is the primal doer. That is all.
Okay, I would like to say also in the second case, when the person is thinking he's the doer and suffering, it is also meant to happen. He has to suffer. It's a
Absolutely.
predetermined.
Yes.
Okay.
That is why the emphasis the master say when you come on to the spiritual journey, it is nothing small, it's a big thing because it is the opportunity to end the suffering. You know what happens,
Beside.
Venkat, is people on the
Yes.
spiritual path, they are still so consumed by their suffering, but they've missed this point that they've been shaken up and out of their stupor, brought onto the spiritual path. That is not a small thing, that is a gift. Annamalai Swami says it happens only because of past merits, past prarabdha, that this opportunity comes in this life. So to take that opportunity to inquire, to understand, and to see what life is about.
I have one more question since time is running fast. We talk a lot of non-violence in India, okay? And we are very concerned and we feel very, we are emotional when we take a life of anything. But I would like to ask the state or ask you this, that in our scriptures, Rama killed Ravana for any reason, he killed another human being, okay? Arjuna was, as we know, everything, the every details. Arjuna was been asked to kill his cousin brothers and his gurus. So, in our scripture, a human being killed another human being for whatever reason. So it happened. So why we say we emphasize a lot on non-violence, we should not eat this and that.
You see, this is a very interesting question you have asked, and this is again where there is a lot of misperceptions and misunderstanding. Fundamentally, nonviolence is a very beautiful subject to explore because if we had the true understanding that all there is one source consciousness, violence would not arise towards the other. There would be no other to hate, as Maharaj would say, all that I ask is you don't harm another. So, to be violent is a misunderstanding, so to speak. And the understanding is all is an expression of the divine. Now, yet, if you read the Jnaneshwari, where Krishna tells Arjuna, the war has come unasked. Therefore, it is your gateway to heaven. It has come unasked upon you. You've been trained, you're ready, you're prepared, you're prepped for battle. And to not do battle would be doership. To do
Okay.
battle would be your natural dharma. You see? So, non-violence has definitely been misunderstood in this country because it leads to complacency, fatalism. having multiple invasions over centuries from forces outside the borders of India. So these are misperceptions, and this is my understanding of it, because the Gita is absolutely clear on this subject, absolutely clear. So the natural state, which Maharaj called Nisarg Yog, is a state of being at ease, a state of not harming anyone. But if the circumstances are such that you have a role to play and it is your dharma, the Gita says, pick up the bow and fight. It does not say, leave the bow down and exit the battle.
Just like killing the mosquitoes for Maya.
Yeah, so both are valid, but we have to see them in context, you see. That is, and we don't see things in context. We kind of compartmentalize them and see them very black and white.
Okay, I will leave the others to ask questions.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Yes, Suresh.
Hariom Gautam ji.
Hariom.
I just wanted to share an experience and wanted to get your thoughts. I've had few life events like the ones you mentioned, like losing a job in 2023. I lost my father in 2024. Those events definitely touched me deeply, but I was not knocked down, thanks to being in the spiritual path. And quite recently, when I went back home after the Thiru retreat, I've been tending to my mother who had a cataract eye surgery. And last year, I remember when I left back to the US, I was in uncontrollable tears, leaving my mom alone. I couldn't bear that she was alone in a house that had everybody, and then this is the circumstance. But this year it was very different. I left very happy and not even a drop of tear. And there was no fear in my mind with respect to my mom. And I was sure that she's been taken care of. And then I reflected on it. In being in this path, I'm slowly losing many of these emotions that are attached. My compassion and love for her remains the same. But I felt surprised at that occurrence. I just wanted to kind of get your thoughts. And I know we are at time, so I'll leave this. Being with you at the Thiru retreat was a blessing. So thank you for everything that you're doing.
Thank you, Suresh. You know, the American mystic Lester Levinson said, ego is the issue to be looked at. And what you have described is actually a liberation from the ego, your experience with leaving your mother last time and this time. It does not mean you have become insensitive. It means there's a surrender, trust, and acceptance of the divine will. When this surrender starts happening, these qualities of the ego, emotional qualities, being frazzled, being frayed, these start dropping away. This trust that, of course, there will be pain if something happens, but I can't control things beyond a point. It is so beautiful when one reaches this stage, because it does not mean that pain will not arise. It does not mean one has become a zombie and insensitive to life, to people. It is quite the contrary. It is such an acceptance of the divine will and a realization that all I can do is what I feel and think I should do in a given situation and leave the rest to God. Life goes on. Life goes on. And to trust that, that is what gives deep peace. And Lester Levinson said, ego is energy in motion. We are so used to being emotional bodies and getting lost in emotions and drama and fears and what ifs and what if not and all that stuff, that when we get freed of all this vibration of the ego, which is mostly fear-based, it becomes something quite new to us. We can't fathom. And we think we've become cold people. But you will know for yourself. You will know deep within your heart. In fact, it is the opposite. The love burns stronger. When the ego's antics are not playing out, the love is deeper and stronger than ever. Because it is that felt oneness. It is a deep feeling, a deep, deep feeling. And one starts resting more and more in that, you see. That is what happens. That flame, which was flickering, because all these thoughts, emotions were the winds which were making it move left, right, left, right, left, right. That is becoming steady, the flame of the heart. That is what is happening. So I would say that it's a very beautiful thing you have shared with us. Because, of course, you see, the mother-child relationship is the strongest because for the child, the mother is the source, the womb of creation. It is a representation of the source. The mother-child relationship is a very strong bond. So life has given you the opportunity to explore this between what it was a year ago and what it is now. Everything is a lesson. Everything is a learning. We are here to learn. This is life. This is the school of learning. Every pain is provided to us to learn. Every pleasure is provided to us to learn. That is why we are here. And so when sharings like yours are shared, everyone benefits because it is everyone's experience. Everyone has a mother. That is how we are here. So that is the value of satsang, because we understand and learn from each person's lived human experience. So I hope that I have helped answer your question in some way.
Yes. Thank you, Gazam. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Yes, I'm going to take Padmani. If you're in Mumbai, then I would request you to come to Satsang because the Zoom is mainly for those who can't do that. So I'm going to take Claudia here. And then if time
Hi.
Permits, we can get to you. Yes, Claudia.
Hi, I don't know if you can hear me.
I can.
Okay. I'm from Germany, first time attending Satsang. I'm very grateful. I have a question concerning Prarabdha that you mentioned, karma. Ramesh didn't go very much into it because he says the idea of karma, and I agree, implies doership.
Yes.
And that is difficult in a way. And now you mentioned Bhagwan, Ramana Maharshi, who said you must have done some things in your past life that you came on the spiritual journey this life. So this is confusing a bit.
All right. You see, the only reason you and me are here is on account of our prarabdha karma. Our
yes.
Vasanas and sanskaras from the past, which are unfulfilled, is the reason why we have taken birth. So this prarabdha karma is, you cannot escape it. The problem is, what Rameshji was pointing to is, this karma, when we make it my karma, when we load it with the sense of doership, then we create more karma. That's why he would say karma means action. It does not mean my action, but the ego imbues it with my doership and my action and therefore creates the suffering. So when Bhagwan says that you just have to run the course of prarabdha out and rest in the divine will, what he is implying is you don't have to load it, this mother load of being the doer, which leads to guilt, shame, hatred, jealousy, malice, ill will, pride, arrogance, and all these attributes. They become a mountain heap of suffering. And to be free of that, I am not the doer, means to live the rest of one's life based on the prarabdha that has been allotted in this life till the last breath. That is all.
Yes, I get that, and that's a big, big relief. But the idea of Ramesh, he mentioned it. He doesn't agree with the idea that individuals have come with the from past lives with this. You know what I mean? With karma, individual karma, and then proceed their journey. He didn't agree on that.
Yes.
He said everything goes into a pool and it's not personal. It's totally impersonal, everything. It's like a lottery.
You are quite right, because you see, according to his concept, the ego dies with the death of the body. So it is not the same ego which takes rebirth. But you see, it is quite irrelevant. Both the concepts is irrelevant, because you are still here and you still have to face life and you have to do what you have to do. So Ramesh did not go into that. He was concerned with the ego he's talking to and whether that ego was at peace or not.
Yes, it is. That's what I come to the same conclusion. It's irrelevant, and maybe that's why he didn't want to talk about it, because I have the idea that karma implies a lot of guilt also. In Christian religion here, it's more the sin that comes with the cross and Jesus and that idea. Yeah. But in the East, it seems karma brings the idea also misunderstood, that you are guilty of what your life is now.
You are absolutely right, Claudia. And I will give you this example, which happened when I was at satsang with him, of a gentleman who was very elderly, and he was serving in wars. And his question to Ramesh was that when I killed someone, all my life I have lived in guilt of killing a soldier of the enemy. And then Ramesh told him, yeah, that you were born. He said that his grandfather was also a soldier. He said that was your job. That was your dharma. You were born in a family of soldiers. So why are you taking the onus of doership upon yourself? And that man burst out in tears. And I think when he came to Ramesh, he was probably in his late 70s or early 80s, because he was freed of this load of doership. So what happens is, karma is the functional element. Otherwise, you would not be here, I would not be here. But we load it with my karma. That is what happens. And Ramesh's job was to impersonalize the action, because it was based on nobody is the doer of their actions.
Yes, even if past lives have happened, we don't know, and it's not
exactly.
But then we were also not the doer at the end. It boils all down to that, and that's why I find it very it's helpful maybe to abandon these concepts of karma and sin in the Christian way, because it's just so heavy.
It is very heavy. This whole I have seen so many people from the West break down in tears at Rameshji Satsang, because this cross they were carrying was unbearable, you know. Unbearable.
Yes, I saw that. It was very hard.
Yeah.
Touching.
Thank you.
Yes.
That was very beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. Yes, Padmini.
Thank you. Hi, hi, Gautam. Can you hear me? That's
Yes.
so I want to actually share more than, and maybe at the end, a small question. I want to express how much your talks and all have helped. They've really settled down my life and experiences now in the past few months, few weeks actually, very short, that YouTube threw up, in my feed threw up one of your talks and started listening and attended a few of your satsangs as well, and this live ones. I also find that a lot of what you speak, what you have been share, teaching us, is reflected in my life quite a lot, you know, in terms, so I'm able to draw those connections now and not be massively upset and crazy about why and what and fighting it and resisting everything. So, I mean, it started with when I was married at the age of 17, I met this boy, and he was Punjabi, I was Sindhi, I'm a Sindhi, and family, and they said, no, what, and all Punjabi, and you can't. In those days, in 75, I met him 70, straight out of school, actually. And then I went to, you know, Holy Name Cathedral in our neighborhood, Novena for 16 Wednesdays. I went and I said, I want to marry this boy, I want to marry this boy. Got married, somehow it all happened, it worked out. But then I was married for 14 years and had two beautiful kids. And then the marriage broke up. I'm divorced. After that, it's been now 37 years. And I've not one had any inclination even to get married, and not for any. I mean, I just don't have that feeling. I love just sitting by myself and at the Also, sorry, I'm back jumping. Just to go back, I was wondering, I used to keep thinking that why did I get married? Maybe it was just to have these two kids because I had no connection with my husband after that. We used to meet off and on. I used to go visit our family in-laws were in Hyderabad. He used to come here, but not really strong. It was my kids who I had this strong connection with. So you think that your life and your soul's plan and journey or whatever was to have these two kids. And that is my life now. But now, of course, fighting and very upset about many things about the divorce and families and all of that. But anyway, now, daughters have grown up and have their own lives. And I'm finding myself withdrawing, like you said, parties you don't want to go. As a publisher in my work life, I used to throw many parties, go to many parties. But I in the last 2, 3 years, withdrawing, you know, don't feel like going. And people say, oh, some people say, oh, she thinks she's too great, doesn't want to come. You know, what does she think of us? Forget her, she'll not come only. And then sometimes I would say, no, I'm going to redeem myself. I will come to every single one. And then my daughter said, made a joke and said that, oh God, now if you invite her, you'll say, oh God, she's going to come also. You know, jokes and all. So I love just, I work from home now because after COVID and all, then we shut down the office. And but I love just after work going and sitting in my room watching Netflix and with my glass of wine and not having to interact with anybody or anything. So everything that you're saying, my only I just have a small question at the end of this. So this, I feel so comfortable with this concept of Advaita, which anyway, in my family, we have all these Vivekanand works and one has been reading it. My parents, we didn't have any idol or that dual thing praying to someone. But now, in your lectures, in your teachings, you speak of, I haven't heard too many of Ramesh Balsekar's videos, just a few, but you, it's the same thing.
that non-doership, it's meant to, it there's a divine will, yeah. So there is, so is that divine will and me, is that not a duality of sorts? I don't know, I'm a little confused about that concept, that you accept that there is a force, there is a an energy. I like to think of it as an energy, as a higher power, some nature, let's say, or a, you know, so when I'm not very good at meditating, I hardly manage to do 10 minutes. Then I want to get to work and finish my work, and you know, that way. So I can't. But whenever I do think about it, I think in terms of higher power, but that power and me, we say all the people in the world are one, me and everyone else is one. But there is also a divine energy or higher power that drives all of us and me and all the occurrences of my life. So I'm just a little confused. Is there a duality there of some sort? How do I reconcile that? And how should I see it? How should I view it?
There is only one power. Higher and lower is to differentiate between my will, my so-called personal choices and will, and a higher will. Your will was you thought to get the ideal husband. The higher will said this is finished. So there's only one power. When relationships are meant to get over, they get over. When relationships are meant to be harmonious, they become harmonious. It's one power at work. There are no two powers. Consciousness is all there is. But in my life, I have to act as if I have free will because I have to take decisions, go to this party, don't go to this party, wear this dress, don't wear that dress. I have to act as if I have free will, knowing that my free will is based on factors beyond my control. My nature, my genetics, my conditioning, which God made. And so I have the deep understanding that my free will is God's will in operation. But it must operate as my free will of this body, mind, organism. If I have a meeting to attend on Zoom at 4 p.m., I have to decide shall I attend it or not. So that is my free will in action. But I know that my free will is just a tool of navigating through life. When the overriding will is God's will. Because I may schedule my Zoom at 4 p.m., but the other person doesn't show up because they've had to deal with a crisis at their end. So I don't blame the other person. I don't say, oh, I got ready, you didn't show up, who the hell do you think you are? All that dialogue is finished because I'm resting in the knowing that things are not in my control. That is simply what happens.
There's a lot of peace in that, I have to say. Ever since I've been hearing you, used to listen to a lot of Vedant and all on YouTube, but after hearing you, maybe it's very succinct and simply put, and very beautifully. And as sorry, the earlier one said, sea of calm, something about your own, you know, the energy you transmit. I really want to thank you. That I'm certainly all the storms of life, storminess has totally in few months, weeks, but hell of a lot. It's totally calmed down, you know.
That
And
is beautiful. That is beautiful. And as Ramana Maharshi said, the truth is simple, and that is the truth.
yeah,
It is so simple.
we have to just come in touch with
We
it.
have to just become the simple beings we were when we were children. That is all, Padmini. That is all. We can't blame ourselves for what went wrong in our lives. We can't hate ourselves. We just have to accept this is the way things were meant to turn out. Thy will be done.
Yeah.
Tears may arise, pain may be there, but I rest in the knowing that it could not have happened any other
Any
way.
other way? Yeah.
All right.
Thank
Okay.
you.
Thank you. Thank you. And we'll end this here and sit in silence for a minute. And I mean, look at the forces of nature that allow us to be together from different parts of the world at a particular time. Isn't that a miracle?
I mean, that's just amazing. There's a beautiful saying in Sanskrit, the rivers of karma run deep. What does that mean? It does not mean my karma, your karma. It means everything is connected. This tapestry, this network, this web of relationships, of the one self appearing as the many. This rediscovery of peace, that is why it is called the peace that surpasses understanding, because you can't think your way through peace. At first, the mind tries that to think peace, to find its way through this maze. But the peace is ultimately the peace of the heart. You see, because if you see God in everyone, that is, you're seeing from the heart, not from the mind. The mind cannot see God in everyone. There's the phrase Vishal Hriday, which means large heart. Large heart is the literal meaning of Vishal Hriday, but it actually means one heart, which is the heart of consciousness. Forgiving those who have hurt us, forgiving ourselves for having hurt others. Is the one heart speaking? Forgiving others for making so-called mistakes. Forgiving ourselves for making so-called mistakes. How could there be a mistake? A mistake is a word we put out there for something which didn't go right. Thank you.